Radio. I'm Kristen Welker at the White House. Out in the Gulf of Mexico, Tropical Storm Debbie is gaining strength. Several beaches are closed to the public along the central Gulf Coast due to rip currents.
Getting pulled under the water, and it's very strong.
Weather Channel meteorologist Jeff Moreau has the latest.
Still a tropical storm with 50-mile-an-hour maximum sustained winds. The pressure has been dropping just a little bit, so it may be strengthening.
Forecasters say the storm is expected to turn gradually westward, but the track is still far from certain. Authorities deployed extra security forces in Cairo streets, where Egyptians are waiting to find out who their next president will be. NBC's Richard Engel reports supporters of the Muslim Brotherhood candidate are rallying in Tahrir Square, while those backing a former Hosni Mubarak insider are also gathering.
There are just as many demonstrators who want the military's preferred candidate, and they started gathering in Nasr City last night.
This is NBC News Radio. The Chinese space program has taken a huge step.
It's a first for China as it strives to keep up with the American and Russian space programs. The Shenzhou 9 capsules maneuver with the Tiangong 1 module was shown live on national TV. A spokesman for their manned space program says the manual docking represents a major breakthrough for them. Chinese astronauts have been living and working inside the module for the past week. As part of preparations for manning a permanent space station, China plans another mission to the module later this year, and they say they may end up sending a man to the moon. Scott Carr, NBC News Radio.
A wildfire near Colorado Springs has quickly grown to more than 2,000 acres and prompted thousands of residents to flee their homes, while another fire to the north claimed more than a dozen cabins. There are at least 7 wildfires burning in Colorado. Today is day 2 in jail for Jerry Sandusky. The former Penn State football coach was convicted on 45 counts of child sex abuse. He's likely to be behind bars for the rest of his life. I'm Kristen Welker, NBC News Radio.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance has got me reflecting a bit. You know, about all the places I've been so far, all the nice folks I've met, and all the money GEICO saved them. I mean, if I had a dollar for every time I saved somebody money on car insurance, I could retire tomorrow. But then, I'd have to stop my journey across America. I'd never get to visit Collinsville, Illinois, and see the world's largest bottle of ketchup. Well, there's no way I'm going to miss that.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com to see how much you could save. GEICO, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Overheating can cause major damage to your radiator and your bank account. Avoid expensive repairs with super savings on Peak 5050 ready-to-use coolant on sale for $7.99 a gallon at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Get maximum cooling protection with Peak 5050 ready-to-use coolant for $7.99 a gallon at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Limits apply. See store for details.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hey, Jamie, who sings that song? Whoa, piece of bread.
That can't possibly be a real song.
No, it is. We heard it on the car radio this morning.
Matt, we really need to get HD radio so you can hear song lyrics better. Actually, we should get a Kia Sorento with the Yuvo infotainment system and HD radio. This way you can hear all your corny lyrics with crystal clear digital sound quality, and I can listen to good music on all the extra FM HD2 and HD3 stations it offers. Now sing that song again to me.
Whoa.
Voice-activated Yuvo infotainment system with HD radio. Now available in the Kia Sorento.
It probably set back the program for a couple of years.
Well, maybe
they kept, but this demonstrated that cyber weapons could physically destroy critical infrastructure. Now, the problem is we have SCADA devices attaching all of the infrastructure we have in the U.S. Our dams, our electrical power grid, everything is remotely controlled by the Internet. And there's always a SCADA device in between the Internet connection and what the device is doing.
Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
And now, on the home front, sponsored by your local Jeep dealers.
Have a son or daughter deployed, a husband or wife? As hard as it may sound, don't make the fact that your loved one is far away the central fact in your life. That advice from a Marine mom who knows the ups and downs and the difficulty of dealing with a loved one at war. So how do you accomplish that? Well, Kathy says take good care of yourself. Your service member wouldn't want you to revolve your life around them being gone. Eat right, exercise, find creative outlets or hobbies, read some good books, volunteer, and make sure to visit with loved ones when you can. Moms also say ditch negative people in your life. You don't need them around while dealing with such a stressful deployment. Instead, surround yourself with loving, positive people and don't feel guilty about having fun. You can take that little getaway or trip to break up the long deployment. Your service member will be glad you did.
Make tracks to your local Jeep vehicle dealer today and take advantage of an exciting military cash allowance on the full line of legendary Jeep vehicles. And Jeep wants to express its extreme gratitude and pride for your military service.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions. And I'm joined by my co-hosts, Ed Alera of the law firm Buchanan, Ingersoll & Rooney, and Joe Applebaum of the Potomac Companies. And we have a fantastic lineup of guests for you today, including Chris Fay. Chris is the Executive Director of Homestretch. Manny Trujillo, President of Swain Tex. Kirk Thomas, founder and owner of Diversified Environmental, and Derek Padden, president of Blue Glacier Management Group. Well, let's get started. I'd like to introduce to you our first guest. His name is Chris Fay, and Chris is the executive director of Homestretch. So, Chris, welcome to the show. And you're welcome. What is Homestretch?
We're a nonprofit. Our mission is to empower our homeless families to secure permanent housing and to attain the skills, knowledge, and hope they need to attain self-sufficiency. So what this means is we take them from being homeless, they have kids, put them in a home, and then we do everything we possibly can to transform their lives. So once they leave us, they will never be homeless again, and they'll be able to live on their own with the income that they make.
Never homeless again.
That's the ideal, and for most part, that is a reality.
Wow.
We have a very high success rate.
In fact, it's astronomical, in my opinion. Well, what is your success rate?
Well, for instance, in 2010, it was 90%. That means 90 out of 100 families not only graduated from the program, but 2 years later will be demonstrate to be still housed, still employed, still able to live on the income they make.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, a little bit later, we're going to ask you how you do that.
Yes.
Can you give us a specific example?
Yes, well, one of our most satisfying achievements recently was a family. This was a family that this was escaping domestic violence, a mother with four kids. When she came to us, she was here from another country, but she didn't know the language, she didn't drive, she had never worked a day in her life, she had been a homemaker. So in order to escape violence, homelessness was the necessary result for her and her children. She was also terrified because her husband actually had threatened to kill her and her children when she fled. We took her and then wrapped around an array of services meant to affect every area of her life so that 2 years later, not only was she able to learn English, she had earned a cosmetology degree, she was living on her own, on the income she was making, and her children were getting straight A's in school. Her oldest boy had gotten a scholarship to New York University and graduated earning the Outstanding Student Award in Science and Technology from New York University. And that was around roughly 2 years.
Wow,
that was an incredible trajectory that some of these families can make, given the resources and the support that we can give to them.
How many families have been able to do that over the years working with Homestretch?
We're now in our 22nd year, and we're almost at 1,000 families. So with a roughly 90% success rate, that means 900 out of 1,000 families have escaped homelessness for good.
Yeah. Well, thank you for doing that very, very important work. And so what I think everybody wants to know is, homelessness is oftentimes considered to be intractable. It's just you cannot solve it, but you have. How?
Yes. The first distinction I should make is that there's the chronically homeless single individuals who, while they may have children, don't have custody of them. These are the people we often think of as the ones who are on the park bench or begging outside of a corner. And they're adults. We serve a more hidden population, which is still a significant proportion. Those are homeless with kids. Now, these are parents who have a higher chance of stability, and they still have their kids with them. So they still have something there that they can use. And our effort is to wrap the services around them so intensely and that they really cannot say, I can't. We try and make sure all the obstacles in their path are removed and give them the support they can move forward and really cheerlead them on. So that they set very ambitious goals for what they can achieve in a roughly 2 year period.
Chris, that's phenomenal work. Has this been your life's mission?
No, I almost came into it accidentally. My background was I went to Columbia University, Graduate School of Film. One of the first projects I undertook was a documentary about homelessness. At that time in New York City, there was a stretch of the Amtrak tunnel on the west side of Manhattan that was abandoned, and there were homeless people living underground there. They were known as the Mole People because they lived underground. I thought, what a great story. I've got to film this. So I got a good camera and a small crew, and I decided I was going to go down. But I also realized it was very dangerous because I could be robbed, they could pawn the camera, and I'd be out. So I needed someone to go with me who could be a security. And I met a man named Matthew, who was a ferocious human being. He lived in the tunnels. He was a homeless man, never learned to read or write, but become a very, very scary figure. But he also was someone that told a great story, and he was very compelling. And I thought, if I can befriend him, he'll be my guide. And I said, I want to do this movie, and I want it to be focused around you. You can guide me through the tunnels. And he said to me, Chris, I know what's going to happen. You're going to be my best buddy through the entire duration of this film, buying me coffee and donuts. And at the end of this thing, you're going to have a movie, and I'm still going to be homeless. And you'll change your cell phone number. I won't even have your current cell phone number. Why would I do that? What's in it for me? And he was right, and I didn't know what to say. But a moment later, he shook my hand with a crushing grip, and he said, Chris, I'll tell you what, I'll promise, if you promise me that you'll devote your life to helping people like me, it doesn't have to be me, but people in my situation, then I'll do this movie.
So
I said, I promise.
Yeah, but did you mean it?
No. No, I didn't. I wanted to get the movie made.
So what happened then?
Well, we were down there for a number of months, and so meeting these individuals whose lives had been so broken, who were in such desperate straits, and who wanted so much to be able to change their lives if they knew how, that I realized that I had made a vow. In the eyes of God, I'd made a vow that I had to keep. And so at the end of the movie, I went to a soup kitchen where I had volunteered previously, and I said, give me the opportunity to create a program around these individuals that can be more transformative than merely giving them a meal. And they said yes.
Did you know anything about how to do that?
Not a whit.
Well, how did you do it then?
Well, I made a lot of mistakes. I think, you know, when you start something like that, you have to have dedication, and then you try and gather the tools around you. So I thought, well, I'm going to try and gather people who do know what they're doing, have them work for me. So I went out and found a social worker, you know, found a psychiatrist, found other people, job trainers, and said, come and help me. And we stumbled our way along. But eventually we started doing really incredible work, started seeing lives change, won all sorts of awards for our work in Manhattan.
You know, for some people, they get a real high from helping the unfortunate. And then there comes a point where they say, wow, you know what? This is really hard, and it's not working as well as I thought, and they kind of just quit. Did that ever happen to you? Did that thought ever cross your mind?
Yes, of course. I think there were times when I thought about going and doing something else. But there was always someone or enough people that I was working with who were able to change their lives that it became inspiring to me. And it became, I think, probably the most satisfying work I've ever done. I still have contacts with people from 15, 20 years ago who changed their lives, who had been living in the parks in cardboard boxes, and now they're housed and homeless and no longer homeless, and they're working. And they call me on Father's Day and wish me, you know, happy Father's Day.
Was there anyone who ever, either because they didn't make it or they didn't keep a promise to you, et cetera, they broke your heart?
Oh, yes. Actually, we've seen people die. I've known people who, there was a homeless woman that came to us for help, and she was so accustomed to using drugs and using sex as a way to get drugs that when she relapsed, her relapse meant she was going to go out and turn another trick, and she met the wrong man and she was killed. I remember having to tell everyone else in my program, all these people who were new to recovery, who were trusting me that this is the right thing to do, that this young woman named Loretta had been murdered over the weekend. So we see people, we see the consequences. We see the dramatic stories of success, and we see the phenomenally sad stories of defeat and loss.
There was a time in your life as a young person that you had a life or death experience, did you not?
Yes. Yes, indeed. Well, I talk about transformative moments. I've had one, and this one was when I was 15 years old. I was a bit of a reckless youth. I was living in the country, and a buddy and I decided to go and see a movie in the afternoon. This meant hitchhiking without the support of my parents. They didn't know where I went. Later in the day, after it became dark, I was hitchhiking back, and I was hit by a car. I didn't see it coming. It came from behind, and it knocked me out of my shoes, knocked me about 20 to 25 feet into a ditch. When I came to, there was a stream of blood shooting up in the air like a geyser, and I was in enormous pain, and all these people had gathered after this accident looking at me in the ditch, talking about me. And the gist of their conversation was, how long do you think he has to live? Will he make it through the night? I came to quickly the conclusion I probably was dying. But before I could think much more, a woman who lived in a nearby house, I didn't know her, she was a stranger to me, ran out with a blanket, chased all these people away, sat in the ditch, covered me with a blanket. This meant she was covered in my blood, incidentally. And she held my head in her lap and said, I want you only to listen to my voice. And then she asked me things like, tell me your name, tell me about your mom, tell me what, you know, and she wanted me to think only good thoughts. And she was prepared for me to die in her arms, but it was going to be a gentle death if that was going to be the eventuality. And I never met her again. But she was so inspiring to me that this stranger would come and do that for a boy that wasn't even her own. I thought, I want to live a life that is worthy of this woman.
You're out there literally saving lives and changing lives and changing future. I'm guessing some people see you almost as a savior or messiah. How do you keep your ego in check?
Oh, I've had to deal with that, yes. And I think that's where your staff comes in, because your staff knows you're not. You know, my deputies, my case managers, they know that. And so we have to work as a team. And one has to be aware of those dangers so that you don't put yourself in a position where I go and try and save someone when they actually have to do the work themselves. There were times back in New York where I did stupid things. I would go into a crack den to pull somebody out, thinking that I could save their life. I don't do that anymore. I've come to the realization that they have to do the work. We're their supporters. We can open the doors for them, but they've got to walk through.
Would you give us the web address, please, for Homestretch?
Absolutely. www.homestretch-inc.org.
So Homestretch, just like it sounds.
Yes.
-inc.org.
Look us up.
Thank you.
We'd love people to know about it.
Well, we will. We've been speaking with Chris Fay. Chris is the executive director of Homestretch. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Joe Applebaum of the Potomac Companies and Ed Alera of the law firm Buchanan, Ingersoll & Rooney for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit us on the web at www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders just like Chris. And we will be back in just a moment after this important business spotlight.
Good afternoon. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage, and this is your business spotlight. Joining us today is?
John Adams.
And John, what company are you with?
Pingtone Communications.
What is Pingtone Communications?
We are a service provider providing a hosted voice over IP service to business customers.
And what makes your business special?
Well, we provide a highly reliable and quality service to business customers where, you know, what we're doing today is unparalleled to a lot of the other service providers that have not been in our space as long. We've been doing this since 1999, catering to the metro D.C. market.
Is there a particular success story you like to reference in these situations?
We do a lot of work overseas with the troops. They need to communicate back home to their families, morale, welfare, recreation. That's a small part of our business, but it's a part that's important to us. That's communication actually over satellite. So it's been pretty rewarding, that aspect of our business.
Right. What do you enjoy most about the job?
I enjoy bringing solutions to customers that have an impact on some of the things that they're trying to accomplish in their business. And, you know, seeing those ideas and the things that we provide allow them or enable them to realize those benefits.
Wonderful. And how can someone reach you?
www.pingtone.com.
Wonderful. This has been John Adams with Pingtone Communications, and this is Peter Schwartz with Vistage bringing you your business spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Ed Alera of the law firm Buchanan, Ingersoll & Rooney, and Joe Applebaum of the Potomac Companies. And our next guest is Manuel Trujillo, or Manny Trujillo. He is the president of Swaintex. So, Manny, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And tell us, what is Swaintex?
Swaintex provides solutions to clients in the private and commercial side and federal government to enable them to be more secure through cybersecurity and secure the resources they take care for the end users.
Can you give us an example of how what you do touches the life of the everyday person?
Like, for instance, in a bank that we manage all the operations in the branches, by keeping the branch running, all the users can really get the check, deposit the check on time without impacting their day-to-day lives.
So as I go to the bank, that transaction takes place securely and easily because of things you're doing behind the scenes.
As part of one of the elements, correct.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. How long has the company been around?
Has been for 12 years.
Okay, and you acquired the company, though, recently.
Correct. I acquired 2 years and a half ago.
Got it. And how big or small, by whatever measure you
want
to
use? We are 15 people now.
Okay. And are you an accidental CEO or business owner, or was there a plan?
There was a plan. I love to have a 20-year plan. I update it yearly, and, of course, things change, but I love to have a 20-year plan.
Did I hear you say 20-year plan?
Correct.
You were how old when you created your first 20-year plan?
20 years old.
Well, why did you do that?
I read in a book that a relative of mine gave me, and I found it very fascinating to help me define and shape what I would like to become.
Did you have any idea at 20 years old what would be in the plan?
Yeah, I always was very fascinated with China. I was fascinated with the U.S. I was fascinated by the world. So, yes, so that was one driver.
How much of the plan has come true?
A lot. It's a big chunk. Being able to study and be able to be in the U.S. and live in the U.S., be able to be exposed to China, Europe, and travel and do business globally has been a dream.
You know, we hear today that business planning and strategic planning, you can almost throw it out the window because the world changes from, you know, 1 month to the next, much less year. Yet you have a 20-year plan. How is it that that works when everything changes all the time?
It just be ready. Once you put the last word in the plan, you know it's all obsolete, but at least you have some guidance, some inspiration, some metrics, some ideas where you can focus your energies to help you say yes to some ideas and say no and avoid distraction.
What's one thing in your life that you think you would not have done if it were not for this 20-year plan?
That's a great question. I think studying, one is, I'm very passionate to study, to learn. So having goals to study a specialization, a master, that was something I wouldn't have done, had not had a good plan.
Okay. How did you wind up here in the U.S.? I take it you're not a native.
Yes, I'm from the way south. As you can see my accent, I'm from Colombia. I just fell in love with a U.S. citizen, born in Colombia, and within 3 months that I met her, while she was in Colombia, only went out for a few days and engaged when I came here to visit her. 3 months later, I left my own company in Colombia, got married here, live in an attic to stretch my savings until I found my ideal job, and I was lucky. Within 4 months, I found it.
You lived where?
In an attic in Trenton.
In an attic in Trenton?
Yes.
That doesn't sound like the most idyllic home for a newlywed.
Yeah, 3 blocks from the jail of Trenton.
I've been in Trenton. That's really true love. I mean, how did you convince your wife to start a company and live in an attic?
Yes, my plan was at that time is I could start a company or go into corporate. I decided to go into corporate, send 500 resumes. I went to 50 interviews, and I was very lucky to go into Motorola after 4 months of searching.
You know, I can almost see somebody, a real young person, you know, late teens, early 20s, ditch it all, go someplace else, live in an attic. But you weren't a teen. You're 27 years old. You left a country behind with a wife. How? Why?
Yes, and I was very successful in Colombia. I had a good company that grew to 10 people in 18 months, had a top global companies as clients. I just love, and I told her, are you willing to live with a person if I need to flip burgers to survive? Are you happy with that? She was happy, very supportive, so I did it.
Wow. Let's go back in time to Colombia and the Army. Why is it you went into the Army?
I just didn't like the system. It's a mandatory in Colombia, and a lot of people pay money under the table. I didn't like that to avoid to go to the Army. So I told my father, you pay, I will volunteer. So definitely I went, and it was a great experience, very hard.
Tell us a little bit more about that. You said that everybody, it's mandatory to go in the Army, but people pay to get out of their service.
It's a common practice. There are ways to get out, yes.
Was the your time in the Army an easy one?
Very difficult. The first 3 months, extremely difficult physically and mentally, but I love it. Very humbling to give you exposure to all people of different lives, backgrounds, social status, economic status, I learn a lot from quality people from multiple experiences.
And would you do that again?
Absolutely.
Out of how many of your friends went into the Army? So you have this big group of friends. How many of them went into the Army?
Out of 100 on my high school that we graduated, probably 5.
That's it. Everybody else paid to get out.
Or they have some physical challenges, but some chunk, probably 5-10, may have paid.
And that was a very dynamic time in Colombia, I would assume.
Yes. 3 months before I got enrolled, the Department of Justice was blown out and was taken over by the Left Side Army, and more than 100 people died.
That didn't scare you enough to pay to get out?
I was in the presidential guard, we were 2 blocks from that place.
Did you ever fear for your life?
I was lucky. We were called the chocolate soldiers because we were in the presidential guard, so I didn't have to go to the jungle. So, no, it was not that exposed. But for 3 months, I took over the presidents of the Supreme Court, and 2 of his direct reports were killed in that period. So it was a little bit of a target for 3 months.
That's just an unbelievably great story. And then you took that and came to America. What was it like, the change of building a company in Colombia, having served, and now the challenge you faced in the U.S.?
I love it. The U.S. presents amazing opportunities, so I was blessed to be able to go into, it used to be called General Instrument, that was acquired by Motorola in 2001. For $17 million, but that was the amazing opportunities that the company and the country give you. You work hard, you focus, and help people, and it's amazing. All the opportunities are out there to grab.
Well, you put a lot of emphasis on education, and you got tell us your MBA story, which I thought was great.
Yes, within like 5 years on Motorola, I realized that the executive MBA program was a good idea. My manager encouraged me to do so. So I look around. I was accepted in a couple of universities. Motorola was willing to pay for some good programs close by where I was in Horsham, Willow Grove, Pennsylvania area. But I give it a chance, and I say, why don't we try Columbia University and New York University? I send the application. They accept me. Unfortunately, it was not within Motorola policies. They gave me the time to go every other Friday, so they were very generous on that. But money-wise, I had to take it out of my pocket. I'm still paying for that, but I love it.
So let me get this straight. You chose not to pay some money under the table and go to the Army.
Correct.
When given the opportunity for a free ride to go to a college, you chose to pay out of your own pocket.
Correct.
Wow. What does that say about you?
I just followed your dreams, followed your passion.
Despite some pretty heavy prices to pay sometimes.
Correct.
You mentioned something about the people you went to college with or your MBA program versus the professors. I think I found that quite interesting. Can you embellish that a second?
Yes, great. Great professor, very inspiring, successful careers in academia, in the business world, but the value that I got out of the program, most of it, a big part come from the classmates with very diverse industries, experiences, very humbling experiences. Very successful careers and hardworking people, family-oriented. So discussing the business cases around, at least 1 or 2 people were involved in a merger and acquisition or involved, touch, were a client or supplier of the business case that we were reviewing, and very powerful. I still keep very close. They became almost my brothers, 2 of them, of my classmates, and we continue doing, sharing ideas and potential opportunities. So it was a turning around opportunity for me.
It sounds like you really appreciate diverse groups of people, because that's what you said was so great about being in the Army, and you've also said it's so great about the Columbia MBA program.
Exactly, and the teaming group that we had was the most diverse of that class, and we were the best. Not because of me, we had 2 ladies who were brilliant. One was an African-American. We had also a Chinese person from Europe. We were very extremely diverse, and diverse program teams either super succeed or they fell flat. We were very lucky that Columbia gave us a special psychological training at the beginning to build a good team, and we were outstanding.
You mentioned that the hardest thing you've ever had to do was fire someone. Tell us about that.
Yes, great person, a mid-50s with young family, good career, but did try hard, couldn't deliver what we needed. He tried very hard, and it's very, very painful when you know you're impacting a family to have a struggle in their own.
How'd you do it?
We tried to give him opportunities, coaching, training. Motorola is very good with candidate people, so we wait for 6 months to try to transform it, and we couldn't.
Yeah. So why was it so difficult, even though you knew it was the right thing to do?
It's impacting a family. You know, this guy is going to be having a hard time to find a new job, and he has some family to feed, so it's like he's the heart.
Yeah. What sort of legacy would you like to leave, either with your life and or with Swaintex?
People to follow the dreams. Just don't be afraid. Follow the dreams all the time and be persistent. Be surrounded with good people to support you. Swaintex, for me, the first 6 months were a struggle at the beginning. My family, my wife, my father, my friends were extremely supportive. Yeah. And so surround yourself with good people to let you follow your dreams.
Would you give us the web address for Swaintex, please, Manny?
Yes, swaintechs.com.
Fantastic. We've been speaking with Manny Trujillo, president of Swaintex. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Ed Alera with the law firm Buchanan, Ingersoll & Rooney, and Joe Applebaum of the Potomac Companies for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit us on the web at www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders like Manny, and we will be right back in just a moment after this important business spotlight. This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your business spotlight. Today's guest is...
Mike Harden.
Mike, who are you with?
I'm with Vistage International.
What is Vistage?
Vistage is by far the largest and probably the most prestigious organization of CEOs in the world. We have about 15,000 members in 16 different countries.
And what does Vistage do?
Vistage is there specifically to help people get better at what they do at the CEO level. Our goal is to help CEOs become better decision makers, to grow their businesses, to do more with what they've got.
And what do you do at Vistage?
Well, I'm a chair with Vistage, and a chair simply means that I chair a local group of chief executive officers, and I coach each of those people individually and try to make myself available to help them with their business needs.
Why is coaching so important to a CEO? Don't they have it all figured out?
I wish they did. I'd been a CEO myself for a long time, and I wish I'd had a coach. There's just too much going on in today's world. You're being pulled in all kinds of different directions. You're making decisions every day, and it's just so isolated for some people to have to make those decisions without the ability to go to other people.
There's a plethora of coaches out there. Why are you a fantastic CEO coach? Why you?
Well, I would say that what I do is I help good CEOs become great CEOs, and what I do with that is I have certain axioms of business that I try to stress, and one of the first ones is that you deserve the people that you hire and keep.
What does that mean?
Well, you know, if you have A players on your staff, they're going to do a great job for you, and you deserve to have them. If you have B players, well, then you deserve to have B players.
So you're looking for what type of person?
I look for CEOs who are lifelong learners, who want to be better at what they do, and need someone like me to help them get there.
How do we find you, Mike?
Well, I have a blog, and most CEOs look at it. It's called CEOSuccessCoach.com.
We've been speaking with Mike Harden of Vistage and CEOSuccessCoach.com. This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and that was your Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Ed Alera of Buchanan, Ingersoll & Rooney, and Joe Applebaum of the Potomac Companies. And we are thrilled to introduce our next guest. His name is Derek Padden, and Derek's the president of Blue Glacier Management Group. So, Derek, welcome to the show. And what is Blue Glacier Management Group?
Well, thank you for having me. Blue Glacier Management Group is a cybersecurity company that focuses on delivering solutions to federal government, DOD, and commercial entities.
For folks who don't know what cybersecurity means, what does it mean?
Really, it's a fancier name for computer security, where we go in and we help try to defend their networks, identify if there's problems, hackers that you hear about coming in, finding ways to identify if they, in fact, have had somebody break into the networks, and then help them come up with solutions and continual protection if necessary.
And you help protect who from all of that?
What we do is when we help our federal government clients, mm-hmm. We're really helping the systems that they are providing to the really to the citizens of the United States that are using it to go online to look up government regulations, to look up their driver's license type things, if they're looking at tuition forms or federal grants, any type of service that federal agencies provide to folks out there across the United States and abroad, really, because it's the internet. Those are the types of clients that we're supporting so that they can maintain those services for you and us.
So in other words, if I'm doing something online with my driver's license, you're helping prevent my identity from not being stolen, or something like that.
Something like that. What we would be the group that would help make sure that those systems that are running that that service they're continually under attack, so that we can help the agency when necessary to make sure that they stay up and running and the attack is not successful.
How long have you been doing that work?
Blue Glacier's been around since 2003, so we've been supporting clients specifically within the Department of Homeland Security and some commercial entities since about 2007, in a lot more of that operational role.
Well, we appreciate that. Thank you very much. How big or small, by whatever measure?
Right now we're about 22 folks. We depending on the contracts, will grow a little bit larger. But
why you? Why would someone select your company?
Well, I think it's important when you're selecting a company that you look at the culture and the personality of its leaders and its folks, because you want to get the best solution for you, and you want to make sure that people are supporting you in a way that's going to be the same level of effort that they'd want to have for themselves.
So. Well, back in the green room, you were discussing the point of flexibility. How did your upbringing lend itself to your ability to be flexible?
Before you answer that, so flexibility means what to you from a business sense? And then if you'll answer Joe's question,
sure.
Please.
Flexibility in a business sense means when somebody has a problem, I'm going to make my solution fit their problem. I'm not going to try to take a standard solution that and try to fit your problem to it. So it's able to make that quickly as well. So, for instance, somebody says, I've got a network that's set up this way. I'm not going to tell them to change their network necessarily. I'm going to look at how they're set up, and I'm going to say, this is the best way to protect your environment. Here's the tools you've bought. Here's how to use them properly. Instead of telling them they should go spend millions of dollars on redoing everything when it's not necessary.
So your company's culture is flexibility, and that's what it means to you. That's what it means to your clients. Joe, would you ask your question again?
Well, how did that start in your life, and what in your upbringing caused you to be able to be that flexible?
Well, I grew up as a military brat, as we commonly say. My dad was in the Air Force. My mom was an elementary school teacher. We moved around a lot. About every 3 years, we would move to a new place. So I learned, as well as my two brothers, to be flexible in every new place we went to. You had to adapt. You had to go and make new friends. You had to learn the environment there. I've lived overseas, so when I moved to Germany, for instance, my brother and I had to go make friends. We're entering high school, so totally new environment, totally new country, totally new culture. And you could sit around and not do anything and be scared to go out and talk to people, or you can walk up and talk to people and make friends and let them know, hi, I'm here, I want to learn about you.
Well, you moved every 3 years, which for someone who grew up and lived in the same house all his life as a child and then as an adult, why did you then go into the Air Force ROTC?
I went into the Air Force ROTC because, one, my dad was in the Air Force, so... it was always the top service in his mind, obviously, and you know, I have always loved and respected my dad. We have a fantastic relationship, and I actually wanted to do the same type of things he did, and so I also knew that it would afford me the opportunity to learn a craft. A computer security is what I was doing some in the Air Force, and learn. Really discipline, learn how to work with multiple people from multiple areas, multiple cultures in some respect, and serve my country.
So. Most children wouldn't want to move that often. Why was it okay for you?
I didn't know any better. So I was used to moving. That was what you did. Yeah. And when you move every time and you start talking to every other military service, you know, children, your friends, they've all done the same thing. So it's what you know how to do, and so it's not unusual.
It was never difficult?
Not for me, no. I enjoyed it. We moved to some fun places, so I guess that helped. You know, we lived in Ethiopia, we lived in Texas, we lived in Virginia, we lived in Germany. Later on, when I went into the Air Force, I moved to Japan. I lived in Saudi Arabia for 6 months. I love culture, and I love learning about new places, so to me it was always fun.
Have you lived in the same place recently for an adult for any extended period of time.
Yes. Virginia, I've lived off and on in Virginia for almost 27 years, but since 2002, I've been in Virginia with my wife.
Have you ever felt restless? Given your background is moving around, you liked it.
Absolutely. Sometimes my wife and I look at each other and kind of say, why haven't we moved yet? And you know, obviously you don't pick up your company and move, so but we like to travel. So.
Well, you mentioned something in the green room which really resonated. Well, you said that your feelings about your employees and your role for them.
One of the important things I think to realize when you're thinking about starting a company or running a company is that you are dependent on the people who work with you and for you. You think about it at night. I'm taking care of these folks' financial future, in a sense. I'm responsible for them, so I have to do everything right to make sure that they're more secure for the future and are going to continue to want to work with you, work for you, support the clients, do the work you do. And that's what keeps you up at night, is making sure that they are taken care of.
Does it keep you up at night?
Some nights, yes, because you never know what tomorrow is going to bring. So you sometimes, when there's a lot of things going on, you hear about the budget issues in the government. Well, that's one of our biggest sources of income. So you want to make sure that you've positioned yourself, you've got the right reputation out there, your clients respect and appreciate the work you're doing, and they're going to want you back because that means they're going to want your people back as well.
Has that ever felt like a 10-ton crushing weight on your shoulders?
I don't know about 10-ton, but it certainly is heavier than I want to carry sometimes. When you don't have control on the waiting process, you then have to make sure, one, that you're keeping your folks in the loop and keeping, you know, being honest with them, saying, I don't know what's going to happen, but this is what I know so far. And sometimes you have to temper those expectations to say, you know, if there's 10 people competing on the same work, you know, do you have a 100% chance of winning? Absolutely not. But you want to say we've put the best, you know, foot forward, and so they appreciate when you're upfront and honest with them, and that's the best you can do.
In my mind, you're a really cool blend of two things. You obviously have this very sober sense of responsibility for your people. At the same time, you were confident enough earlier in your career to leave a large company, start your company, at the same time doing an executive MBA program. You just had your first child and probably a whole bunch of other things. So how do you fit those two aspects of your personality together?
I was always doing a lot of different things at one time. I love sports. I love travel. I love learning about things. I like doing more than one thing at a time. Sometimes maybe to my own detriment, but I had a very supportive wife who allows me to have some flexibility in what I'm doing, helping to make time for me. She's got a career as well, but we work together very well as a great partnership. And really, there's a lot of hours in the day, and if you use them productively, you can balance it. And I've got a fantastic supporting cast at work too. I mean, our staff and our leaders in Blue Glacier are second to none. So.
You followed in your father's footsteps to join the Air Force. What does your dad think of your success?
Oh, I definitely think he's proud. I think he'll want to make sure he doesn't show me too much, you know, pride, because he'll tell me I'm getting a big head. He's proud of all his sons. There's three of us, but he likes to see that the hard work he and my mom did, raising us, setting ground rules, trusting us to make the right calls on things, is coming through. So I think, and now he's grandparents as well now. So I think they're pretty happy in life with how things are turning out.
As well they should be. Would you give us the web address for Blue Glacier Management Group?
Sure. It's www.blueglacier.com.
Would you spell it for us?
And that's BLUEGLACIER.COM.
Fantastic. We've been speaking with Derek Patton. Derek is the founder. He didn't want us to say that, but he's the founder and the president of Blue Glacier Management Group. I'd like to thank my two co-hosts, Joe Applebaum of the Potomac Companies and Ed Alera of the law firm Buchanan, Ingersoll & Rooney, for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit us on the web at www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders just like Derek. And we'll be back in just a moment after this important business spotlight.
Joining us today is
Gordon Bernhardt.
Gordon, what is Bernhardt Wealth Management?
Bernhardt Wealth Management is a registered investment advisory firm. We're one of the top independent wealth management firms in the Washington, D.C. area.
What makes your company special?
I'd say three things. One is that we are a personal chief financial officer. We act in that capacity for our clients, so that means we help them address their investment issues. We also focus on the holistic approach, so that means we focus on wealth enhancement, wealth transfer, wealth protection, and charitable planning issues for our clients. Second area is that makes us special is that we are a registered investment advisor. We don't have a broker's license, and that simply means that we have a fiduciary duty to always act in our client's best interest. Most of the industry have broker's licenses, and some of them have advisory licenses. And a broker is held to a suitability standard. We're held to the fiduciary standard.
So what that means to a customer would mean that you work in their interest, not for the interest of the stock that you're trying to sell.
That is correct. And the third area that makes us special is that we have a very academic approach to investing. Everything that we recommend to our clients is strictly based on academic research.
And what do you enjoy most about this work?
I love helping clients. You know, I'm passionate. I get satisfaction out of knowing that we touch people's lives. We can then, you know, our role is basically free up their time so they can focus on what's important to them. For some of our clients, that means their family and grandkids. For some, it's their business. And others, it's their charitable interests. We solidify their relationships in those areas.
Great. How can someone reach you?
We can be reached by phone at 703-356-4380 or on the web at bernhardtwealth.com.
Great. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage, and we've been speaking with Gordon Bernhardt from Bernhardt Wealth Management, and this has been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Ed Alera of the law firm Buchanan, Ingersoll & Rooney, and Joe Applebaum of the Potomac Companies. And we are thrilled to introduce to you our final guest of the day. His name is Kurt Thomas. Kurt's the founder and owner of Diversified Environmental. So, Kurt, welcome to the show. And tell us, what is Diversified Environmental?
Yes, well, thank you for having me here. Diversified Environmental is a company that does the removal of hazardous materials, which would include lead, asbestos, PCBs, mold, underground storage tanks, as well as contaminated soil, and we do demolition work.
And the ugliest, most gruesome job you've ever had was what?
We've had many ugly, gruesome jobs, but I would say probably the most ugly, gruesome job that we did was in a very large building at a university, which I would like to not name. This particular building was very old, probably abandoned for about 20 years, and it was full of asbestos, lead, PCBs, and a lot of contaminated material. That building had, as I said, had not been in there for many, many years, and as a result, we spent about 9 months in that building. One of our guys got actually bit by a brown recluse. Which is a spider, which has a very lethal bite.
Yeah, it's a flesh-eating spider, is it not?
Yes, it is.
But there were other dead animals and all different kinds of things.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was dead animals in there. You had a lot of avian excreta.
Now, that's a technical word for what?
For bird poop.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay, so here's what I want to know. You seem to love this stuff.
Yes.
Okay. Why? What is it about this that you love?
It's exciting. It's exciting because you get a chance to meet new people. You get a chance to go to places and fix their problems. And that's just a real turn-on.
How long have you been doing that?
I've been doing this since 1996, as a company owner since 1996.
Got it. And the company is how big or how small by whatever measure you want to use?
Our company varies in size between 20 and 60 employees.
Fantastic. Actually, and before we go any further, there's somebody very special in the room here. She's not in the interview, but we want to make sure we acknowledge her. Who is that?
That's my wife. Her name's Claudette.
Claudette. Welcome, Claudette.
How did you get into this exciting business?
Well, I got into this exciting business. I got a start in it back in the early 1980s, working for my father. He has a company that had to do with some identification of asbestos in a lot of buildings in D.C. And I learned a lot about asbestos and hazardous materials back in those days. And as a result, I kept on working and working and working with a lot of other companies that were in similar types of work. And finally, after many years, I decided to start my own company.
Now, your dad was not the first entrepreneur in the family, was he not?
No, he was not.
Who was?
My grandfather had a construction company back in Texas, back in Houston, Texas, and he built over 50 churches in Houston, Texas, and built many schools as well.
Why churches and schools?
I guess that's what made him close to the community and close to God.
Yeah. So what did you learn from your dad? What did you learn from granddad?
Well, I learned that a commitment to your family and commitment to your job and the way that you can help other families along the way is very important.
So, when you were working for your father, you said something specific in the green room about how you learned on a regular basis. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. Well, as a young man, when I started working for my father around the age of 10 years old, I learned a lot about reading plans and working closely with architects and engineers just as a young boy. And I remember specifically how I used to listen to my father do his presentations. And he had a conference room in his office, and there was a small hole in the wall, and I would sit on the other side of that hole and listen to him do the presentations. And I would listen to him talk for hours, and I learned a lot about that and a lot about talking to people and a lot about how you represent your company.
So you have this history of entrepreneurship, a history of architecture. So you have this intellectual background. What's your intellectual background? How did you learn?
My intellectual background. Well, I basically just learned from my parents. I was brought up by some good parents, although they were divorced. They both gave me a lot of support and help, and believed in me. Believing in me helped me have the confidence to be able to start my own company.
Did learning come naturally for you? You talked about learning from your dad at an early age.
Well,
did it come naturally?
Yes. I would say I was good at learning, but I, of course, have my own learning problems. I'm attention deficit disorder, and I also am dyslexic. But I never let any of that hold me back, and I was still able to pursue my dream in life and start my own company.
As a young person with ADD, for instance, what does it challenge you to do?
Well, it makes it very difficult for you to be able to concentrate on what's right in front of you, and let alone not only be able to have a problem concentrating on what you're trying to read or what you're trying to understand, but when it comes to even reading, it can be difficult because things tend to look as if they are trick questions.
So how'd you do it?
Oh, I don't know. I guess it just took a lot of persistence and hard work.
Yeah.
So doing that, and then how did you make the jump into starting your own company?
Well, after working for a number of companies that are in the similar kind of business as myself, I decided that the most natural thing for me to do is start my own company. Being that I come from a father who has a company, and his father before him had a company, and it just seemed like the only thing that I could do because I couldn't imagine going out working for anybody else. So it just was the most natural thing for me to do.
Well, how about your friends? Did all of your friends start their own companies?
No. I'm the only one that I know of as far as my friends that was able to start a company. Unfortunately, growing up in Washington, D.C., the majority of my friends are no longer here. Most of them have died, unfortunately.
Tell us about growing up. Tell us a story about growing up in D.C.
Well, growing up in D.C. was a little bit rough. You're growing up in an area that you have a lot of challenges. There's a lot of peer pressure to get into things that aren't necessarily good for you. I grew up on an area called Georgia Avenue, not too far from Walter Reed Army Medical Center. And back in those days, there's just, like I said, there's a lot of peer pressure, and there's a lot of things that were going on that can put a young man or a young woman in the wrong direction. And unfortunately, as a result of that, I'd say 99% of my friends that I grew up with, that I knew of, that I spent time with, are all dead now.
Who was your best friend back then?
The best friend I ever had was Philip. And Philip was a real good guy, and Philip was actually working at a warehouse one day, and he was being robbed, and was tied up on the floor, and the police came and shot him by mistake.
Oh my God!
And he died.
How did you deal with that death?
It was very difficult, especially who would ever expect that you're going to go and speak at the eulogy of your best friend.
How old were you?
32.
How is it you think you got out, and that same fate did not befall you?
Good family, good support, and belief in yourself.
An experience in an elevator have something to do with helping you get out?
Absolutely.
Tell us about
it. Best thing that ever happened in my life was when I met my wife. When I met Claudette in an elevator about 15 and a half years ago, that changed my life.
So who was in the elevator first?
I was.
And the doors opened and she walked in?
She walked in. I met her on the basement floor. And I was sick that day, and she was coming back from the movies, and I met her in that elevator. She changed my life.
How? What happened in the elevator?
Well,
we've never had an elevator story on the show.
I asked her if she was married, and I'll tell you, I've never used that line in my life to ask a woman if you're married, but this time something told me to say that.
Complete stranger.
Yes, complete stranger. I'd never seen before, but she was gorgeous. And I said to her, I said, "Are you married?" She said, "No." And from there on, it was history. And we spoke on the phone. I think the next day we spoke on the phone. And I got off the phone, and I knew that was my wife. I got off the phone, and I'm walking around my apartment by myself, talking loudly, saying, "I just got off the phone with my wife. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Finally, thank you."
What has Claudette done for you, especially as it relates to supporting you and your business?
Claudette has been there. She's been there as a supportive. She's been a backup. She's given me inspiration.
Tell us about one time.
Wow. One time. I can give you multiple times, but I can just say that there's been many times when I've been very, very concerned about the company's status, our financial status. Are we going to be able to make it? And Claudette has always been there to tell me that it's going to be okay, things are going to be fine, and just wait till the next day. And she's always been right about that.
Yeah. What kind of a legacy would you like to leave?
I'd like to leave a legacy. For the people that have been on my team and worked with the company, just to know that these folks have had a chance to bring their families up and raise their children and get education and become good people.
The community from which you came from, do you have a lesson or a message that they can take from your story?
Listen to your parents, do the right thing, and go to school. And just believe in yourself.
And meet the right woman.
And meet the right woman.
Would you give us the web address for Diversified Environmental, please?
Absolutely. It's www.diversifiedcorporation.com.
Just like it sounds.
That's right.
Fantastic. We've been speaking with Kurt Thomas. Kurt is the founder and owner of Diversified Environmental and the very happy husband to Claudette. I'd like to thank all of our guests today, including Chris Fay, Executive Director of Homestretch, Manny Trujillo, President of Swaintex, Derek Padden, Founder and President of Blue Glacier Management Group, and of course, most recently, Kurt Thomas, Founder and Owner of Diversified Environmental. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Ed Alera of Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney for helping, Ed Alera with Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney, and Joe Applebaum, I'm so sorry, Joe, with the Potomac Companies for helping me with the interviews. More than anyone, I'd like to thank you, our listening audience. If it were not for you, we would not even have a radio show. So thank you so very much for listening. A thank you to the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce for hosting us like they do every single week. Don't forget to visit us on the web at www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders just like Kurt. And this is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, again saying thank you for listening, and until next time, bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a
a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility.